Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to get started quickly here since we got a slight late start due to Chinese high school exchange students who apparently arrived last night and are so jet-lagged it's hard to actually get them to physically move this morning. But it's my pleasure to welcome Tom Payne. Tom gives an annual lecture in this colloquium updating us on innovations and ongoing work within the clinical computing arena that may be of interest to informatics researchers or those interested in informatics broadly throughout the campus. And the focus right now is going to be on computerized provider order entry. The driving rationale behind this, as I'm sure Tom will cover, is the combination of the fact that this is something that is now a big project just getting kicked off the ground at the University of Washington. There's a number of national driving forces that are instigating more and more people to implement provider order entry. Tom is a nationally known informatics figure. He has received for his work at the VA a Davies Award for implementing computerized systems in the clinical arena, and currently serves as the Chief Medical Information Officer. He's a member of the fellow of the American College of Medical Informatics and a variety of other stuff in the bio paragraph. Sorry, it's brief, but it gives you more time to talk.
Great. Thank you very much, Peter. And hello to everybody that I know, and hello to those who I don't know. Just want to observe that I'm not sure that you have to be from China for a teenager to be tired at this hour of the morning. My teenagers get up about now. So at any rate, this is the topic, and Peter mentioned that I was at the VA for 4 years. That was over a decade ago now, but one of the big projects there was CPOE, and that started my interest in this area. So this is to bring all of us up to date on my perspective of what's happened since then, since the last 10 years in this field. This is the topic list for today. What is CPOE? Why do people regard it to be a difficult thing to undertake? What we've learned about it in the last decade, what we still don't know, which is a long list. And I want to mention a little bit about our own initiative here at UW-Medicine, which is, as Peter said, is recently underway. And then we'll have time for questions. So this is a brief overview of a decade. We've got 15 minutes, so obviously I'm picking from a few topic areas, not comprehensively reviewing the very large literature on this subject. So first of all, what is CPOE, and why do people keep talking about it? Why is it such a big deal? The definition that I use for this is that it's either practitioner or provider. Some people say physician, but they mean by that others than physicians. And some people say care provider order entry. They all stick to the CPOE acronym. And the common definition is that the person whose idea it is to order a service is the one that puts the order in. So it's an ordering practitioner. Now, that's a little bit loose, as Ping, if she were here, could tell us that it's often a group process that leads to a decision for a plan. Somebody puts it in, but it is somebody who has authority to enter an order. What is not CPOE is when you write all this down on a piece of paper, hand it to somebody else, and they put it into a computer system, try to read your handwriting. So that's a distinction.
Quick question. Is it inpatient or outpatient distinction in CPOE? Prescribing is kind of like...
So there are other terms, and that's a good point. That we hear e-prescribing, and my view is that it's pretty much the same thing. If you narrow it down to therapeutics, medications, we call it e-prescribing or other things. But it really boils down to somebody sitting down and putting that request for service or a product into a computer system themselves in their workflow. So that's what it is.
Tom, just one comment, though, just because some people here have heard Beth Devine's talk. So it's possible to do e-prescribing isolated from an electronic medical record system or isolated from an all-purpose computerized provider order entry system. And that's a very different beast than an EMR linked to order entry that allows you to order follow-up visits, labs, x-rays, physical therapy, referrals, and medications.
You name it. And also for, say, imaging studies. It's possible that somebody is just for imaging studies and nothing else. So all of these things are kind of as possible we have subsets of these systems. I'm talking about the whole kit caboodle, CPOE. Okay, here's some things that other people say about CPOE. You hear me for 50 minutes. But this is what other people have to say. Dean Sedig, way back in 94, pointed out that experience has shown that it is hard to implement a physician order entry successfully. And this was in the very first, I believe it was the first issue of JAMIA that Dean did this review. So it goes back a ways. David Bates, who's written an enormous amount on this over the years, points out in a kind of understated way, implementation of a POE system, this is before they called it CPOE, is a systems change of the first magnitude, which is very difficult to accomplish. Someone else said last week when we visited them at an academic medical center in the West, I've been implementing products for 11 years, and CPOE was by far the most complex and hardest. The CEO of that same center, I asked him, why, what did you want out of this? What, I mean, you invested a lot of resources, why? And his three-word answer, orders control everything. I would actually highlight the center word there, that the stream of ordering passes through CPOE, and if you have some sort of influence over that stream, for better or for worse, you can influence what actually is ordered. And lastly, someone, I don't remember who it was or I would have credited him, says the only thing harder to accomplish is opening a hospital for the first time. So it is regarded by others to be a really tough thing, and I would say when I did it at the VA, it was the toughest thing I've done since internship, other than internship. And since then, nothing's come close. So this is the big kahuna. So why did this get national and international interest to launch our decade of review? I'll go back to David Bates' article in JAMA, which is a little more than 10 years old, but it set the foundation for this decade. And it, he did a controlled trial, interesting, not too many of those, controlled trial, investigating the influence of CPOE with paper ordering, two-arm study. They both had a pharmacist rounding with them. The comparison was, what were the rates of serious adverse medication events, serious ones, not little rashes, in the groups that had CPOE and those that didn't. In a hospital that was very interested in errors and already had done all they could to reduce errors, probably more so than many places before this was known to be such an issue. They found that with CPOE there was a 55% reduction in the non-intercepted serious medication errors. That got the attention of many people. It got the attention of the Institute of Medicine. There were strategies recommended to the nation as a result of this. This was published, yes, in JAMA, but yes, also in USA Today. It reached the public consciousness. And one of the recommendations from that group was to implement physician order entry. So that's what sort of launched this decade. At the other end of the decade, another article from the group at the Brigham, this one, David Blumenthal, who is fairly prominent in this field these days, and Jaws did a survey of U.S. hospitals on how far they are in achieving the transition to electronic health records in their institution. And what they found was that in the area of CPOE, that it was about, you know, 1 in 5 or 1 in 8, depending on how you define it, were using provider order entry in their institution, part or in whole. So most American hospitals are not yet doing this. Actually, most UK hospitals are not yet doing this. But outside the hospital, around the globe, many places are doing medication orders or lab orders in clinics. In the hospital, in the US, it's more common that it is not happening, except in large centers such as ours. Ours is a little bit the exception, and in our community, I'll show you later. This is what orders look like today. This was taken 9 years ago, but it could have been last week. This is the way orders are written. You can see all modalities are represented here, not all, many of them, lab, imaging, micro, medications, and so on. This is the way orders are entered traditionally on paper. If you can do it electronically, you make it easier for the practitioner by building a collection of orderable entities. And the ultimate, at least in 2011, is a protocol or a plan of care. And that protocol is built of order sets. The order sets are built of pre-configured orders. And if you go all the way to the bottom, there's an order dialog at the bottom. This is what an order dialog looks like. It's this, taken from the VA system. You can see penicillin, instructions, route, schedule, quantity, refills, pickup, et cetera. That's the guts. That's what you got to put in to do an order. but that's not what you want to do very often because it takes too long. So you build a 6 in blue over there is a pre-completed portion of this dialog box. Sometimes all of it is pre-completed. That makes it quicker to launch. And you put those together into a screen in the background. That's an order set. It's a bunch of pre-configured orders. And if you put all those together for day 1, day 2, day 8, that is a protocol, or it's called other things by different vendors. So that's how this sort of is built up. This is what people hope to achieve when you have these things put in. You've got that moment, you're making a decision. You order an imaging test. Turns out the person has renal impairment. Maybe you know it, maybe you don't, but at least it makes you aware that you can ignore it or cancel your order. This is the sort of thing that CPOE makes possible. So I mentioned order sets, and order sets are there for good reasons, and this is Matt Eisenberg's slide. Many of you know Matt now at MultiCare in Tacoma, has been in our community for a long time. He puts in that the main reason we collect orders together is to reduce time to entry. It also can reduce errors, because you might not remember to do things correctly. If it's all there together, it's more likely you will. You can make sure you don't forget that order. It's more complete. You can build in decision support and evidence-based care. This is how we care for community-acquired pneumonia in our hospital. You can do anything you want, doctor, but this has the rudiments of the plan that we've all agreed to. And maybe if you make that plan easily available, more people will follow it than if you rely solely on their memory. A little anecdote. I was just on service at Harborview. We had a patient with sepsis from urinary tract infection, and did a pretty good job with him. You know, we got him taken care of. He's getting better, and maybe didn't hit it all right perfectly first time. We had to change some orders later and so on. And then as the intern was preparing the discharge documents, she reached over and said, "Huh, look at this." She showed it. "This is a protocol for handling urinary sepsis in men." That would have been handy. So that's the problem. That a lot of these committees labor and try to figure all this out, and their wisdom, their collective wisdom, is not made available to everyone. Or you change something, and then you got to go find all those stacks of papers. Those are the logistical reasons that order sets are popular in organizations. This is what an order set looks like. This is. Happens to be another from Matt Eisenberg. You can't read it all, but what you can take my word is there. You know the date you made this, the last date you changed it, order entry directions, nursing orders, diet orders, IV infusions that are standard. This is what we tend to do here. You do whatever you want, but it's better if you choose one of these, and routine admit medication. So that just makes it easier and faster to write orders to admit somebody to the hospital.
Can you select one of those and then make adjustments for the individual patient?
Yep, there's no shortage of variations as a developer you can do. And that's the good news and the bad news. Is it clicked by default? Is it unclicked by default? Is it clicked and you can't change it? You know, there's all kinds of variations in how much you can enforce this order set or leave it completely to the clinician to decide. And some of these are just lists of every kind of antibiotic or IV fluid just for convenience. They have no intention to order them all. It's just they're all there in one place. You don't have to go looking for them other places. Sort of convenience order sets. So it's a really powerful metaphor. The main reason to do it is it's faster. And that's our main challenge with CPOE is you got to beat someone scribbling on a piece of paper. This is what an order set collection look like when you're getting a little farther along. We made it all the way to through the E's on this screen. Now, I'll tell you right now that most people don't, when they're doing all this Herculean work, they're not thinking 5 years down the road. And they're thinking, okay, now we know how to treat community-acquired pneumonia, we think, in 2012. What about 2017? And where the heck is that order set? Is it somewhere else? So there are companies, successful companies, that help you with that problem. That if you subscribe to their service, they will help you create these and maintain them and say, you know what? Paper came out in the New England Journal last week, said we thought it was a good idea, turns out it's not a good idea. Here's a better idea. And they will tap you on the shoulder and say, order sets 2, 3, and 86 should be changed in this way if your P&T committee agrees. So maintaining this is a long-haul challenge. So let's say you buy all this and you signed up and here you're going to be on the team, and I'll show you our team later. What kind of stuff do you do to spend your days? Well, one thing you do is you gather up all these screens. This is a sheet that you use. It's a little old, but basically it's what we use to order imaging tests at High Review and the U today. And then you have discussions with the radiology group about how this could be implemented electronically. And these discussions can go on a long time, okay? Because they said, you know, for years we wanted this field to be filled out, and now we have our chance. So please make it mandatory. And there's a tension there between the understandable interest in completeness and communication enhancement with the flip side, which is it's 2 in the morning, I've got 87 things to do, and time to do 6. So am I going to fill out 18 fields in this request or 1? So that's the sort of challenge we face. When you're done with that one, we got a lot more where it came from. And there's racks of these all over wards. A lot of them are the same. Some of them are different because you have different kinds of patients. You've got a burn unit. You've got an oncology ward. So some of these are a little different. So there's a heck of a lot to do just with a paper, but that's not the problem. The problem or the challenge is not the stuff, not the computers. It is the people, the communication that use these to help and aid communication. And that you can't take an easy picture of because it's everybody who works here. So this is, you've probably seen this slide if you've heard me give this talk before. It's basically the number of pages we got implementing CPOE way back in the day, 1998. And you can see that this is the number of times we were paged for help. And this is the number of notes that were going in. And this is what we went to CPOE on the wards. And you can see when the page curve went up. It wasn't writing notes that was the problem. It wasn't looking up labs that was the problem. It was writing orders that was the problem. People needed help. And so there are risks to doing this. One of the risks is the burden of support. And I want to make sure you all understand this because people wonder why is CPOE a big deal. Here's another one. This is taken from Epicare experience with Homer Chin. Several years ago, probably more than 10 years ago now, they put in Epic, pretty good system. They asked people 2 months later, what do you think of it? Is it worth it, the time and effort? Most of them said no. Well, a few months later, most of them said yes. And now, don't try to take it away from them. But the point is, it's hard to get over that hump. So there's a risk there. And not everybody makes it over the hump. An article published in Europe on the left on things that went wrong and why it was pulled. That was just for laboratory ordering, by the way. And because they're busy people, the folks at Cedars-Sinai didn't have time to write the paper, so they had the LA Times write it for them. And that is famous. And I'm here to tell you, the folks at Cedars-Sinai are way smart. It's not because they aren't smart. They work their rears off. They work really hard. They were biting off a really hard thing to do. And it is not, the story's not over here. They're putting it out. But this is now over 10 years later.
2003.
So 8 years later. When it's done, we'll stop the clock. At any rate, there's a risk here. There's a risk that your community will find so many problems with it, they'll all ask for it to be stopped. And that's happened. You know, you look around our community, it's happened in most such places. Group Health Cooperative, Puget Sound. It happened to the VA in 1996. It happens in most places. So it's not uncommon. It's getting less common, but it's a risk that the user community will say, you know, this is not ready for prime time. Let's stop it. The bigger risk is the risk of doing harm. Any powerful intervention has the potential to harm. Putting in electronic orders is no different. You're going to give methotrexate, good medicine for lots of conditions, give too much of it, give it to the wrong person, causes problems. CPOE, same thing. Now the three papers I'm going to show you here are not randomized controlled trials. They're observational studies. So they are not any proof that CPOE or any other intervention caused problems with children. But it raised the question, and this is a famous one, it raised the question that introducing CPOE and critically ill children transferred to this hospital was associated temporally with a rise in the mortality rate. And that got a lot of people thinking really hard. And everybody, of course, Monday morning quarterback, they read over the paper, well, of course, look what they did wrong. But they don't read in the paper about that 10,000 things they did right. So there's a risk here, and the risk is real to real patients and real problems. Two other papers following that, one from Mark DiPocaro at our own Children's, showed that in the same observational fashion, which is subject to all the biases that you're aware of, that it looked like the relative risk was reduced for children at our Seattle Children's Hospital in association with introduction of CPOE. And then Chris Longhurst at Stanford Children's published this last year, and it showed a temporal association with decrease in mortality. So there's reason to be a little bit concerned, there's reason to be hopeful, but quite honestly, these studies don't answer the question. So back to why it's hard. This is the definition to, I think we would regard to be one of the fathers of this field, or parents of this field, Homer Warner. What's medical informatics? Technology, 10%, that's what gets many of us interested in this. Medicine, 10%, well, that's why we're in medical school right now. But it's mostly sociology. It's mostly people, it's communication, it's getting along, it's kindergarten stuff. And I say that in, you know that's the important stuff. So that's why it is hard. So now let's go on what we've learned over the last decade. Well, one of the things we learned, for those who didn't know it already, is that there are problems with CPOE. Joan Ash and her group did a lot of work on interviewing people, studying their experience, asking questions, and listening to what they say, and came up with a series of papers which are now quite well known. This is a summary of what you found, that CPOE can cause more work for some people. It used to be I scribbled on a piece of paper, somebody else typed it in. Now I have to put it in. I say CXR, who was it? One of our radiologists said, F-U-S-O-B. That was what was on the chest x-ray request. That means follow-up dyspnea. Sometimes interpret it differently. But so now you don't write follow-up dyspnea. Somebody else does that. More work. Workflow issues. You think you have it down until the real world hits. And then you discover what the real workflow is. Also, you discover workflow problems while you're getting ready for this. You just find them left and right. And if Paul were here or Karen, they would take the rest of the hour describing just a handful of those. Never-ending demands. This is a 24/7 sort of thing. You don't look at the clock on Friday and say goodbye, because that's not the way patient care is. Paper stays around. There's communication issues. There's tons of paper communications issues. People get upset. There's new kinds of errors. There's changes in power structure, and there's over-dependence on technology. So all of these things weren't really on the list of what we're trying to achieve when we launched this ship, but they're the reality. It is now, what's also new in the last decade, it is now part of our meaningful use, our high-tech act. It's in law that we're going to push our nation to use CPOE using financial incentives and penalties. So this is new. Revolutionary, at least in my lifetime. So that's a new thing for this year. Some things haven't changed. The most common problems described by physicians are the length of time required to enter orders. Couldn't have said it better myself. So it is still the case that time entering orders is the big complaint you hear from practitioners. One thing that has actually fallen out to be pretty well accepted now is that we need devices that match the workflow of people who work in hospitals and clinics. And it used to be kind of revolutionary. Now it's sort of ho-hum. You go into most hospitals, you'll find something that looks a lot like this. There's desk-based systems. This is an early mobile cart. This is from a friend in a site visit I was required to make in Queens Medical Center in Hawaii. And this is another early generation mobile workstation, which is really, really heavy, and the battery burns up quite quickly, so these aren't used so much anymore. This is what we use on upstairs, down the hall here, laptops on mobile carts, and those can go up and downstairs. Tablets, or now iPads, the latest, all these hyper mobile devices are used. They have strengths and limitations to them. And this slide I took just last week at a university in the West. You can't see it all that well, but I'll point out here you've got one, two, three, four, what they call workstation on wheels, WOWs. And those, it's like a mobile team room. You go from one patient to the next, and you've got a pharmacist, you've got an intern, you've got the attending, you've got people talking about the same patient, debating what to do, and they're all looking at data. They don't have to gather around. Some of them are. They still have paper summary sheets. So these devices are pretty much found in every CPOE site. Wireless infrastructure is part of that. So that's pretty much been the conclusion of the last decade's work. And by the way, you've got all kinds of bad germs in hospitals. So you've got to deal with MRSA and tuberculosis and influenza and all these limitations to the workflow, which makes it really challenging. This is a shot from Harborview, which, you know, every door just about has one of these on it. Infrastructure is also something we've learned. We've learned that you need to have uninterrupted electrical power and HVAC, air conditioning, for these very powerful servers that get so hot. You need the network I mentioned, both fixed and wireless. You need point-of-care devices. You need the EMR with connections to laboratory radiology, ADT, pharmacy, all the other systems. That has to be in and working. And then I view CPOE and all these other things as another layer of infrastructure. It is just another thing you put in, because what you're really trying to do is deliver care, meet your clinical mission, and do a better job of it. And decision support plays into this. And that's why you do all the things below. That's why you put in the devices, because you want to do interesting, creative things that help your clinical mission. Another realization of the last decade is that all these alerts that we thought were so great, well, there's such thing as too much of a good thing, and there's also not such a good thing that comes into alerts. This is from Susan Abakir at the Brigham, and this graph shows the percentage of allergy alerts that are overridden by the ordering practitioner. So you can see that when you start, it was 53% overridden. At the end, 4 years later, 76% were overridden. And the point that I would make here is that why did they do the study in 2000 or in 1999, not 1996? And the reason is they were so busy. They're very good people. They had so much to do. So the message here over the last decade is you should always be measuring this if you can as you go along, because this is fixable. You can address this, but you have to know what's happening. We've learned about the effects of CPOE on workflow. This is from a group actually in the Netherlands that points out that the workflow can be helped and hindered. And here's some examples of both. You can reduce order turnaround time. There's a fair amount of evidence, even from children's here, from multi-care. Not in the peer-review literature, but they have evidence for their quality improvement committees that the time it takes for antibiotics to reach a patient when you decide to give them is reduced. That is a benefit, that you can get to those orders, look things up when you aren't physically at the ward. That's good news, bad news. You can read the orders, and you don't have a bunch of people as often saying things verbally that might be misconstrued. You more often have them entering them directly into the system. The downside is, as we mentioned before, time spent, entering orders, usability. We are way far away from the ideal usability of these systems. In-person communication, shifting responsibilities, communication, these are frequently mentioned problems, including last week. I'm sitting down here in the basement, not the basement, but a long way from the wards. I could write an order to transfuse a patient. And then up in the ward, the blood would show up, and the nurse checked the patient. What's going on? It's not good practice to do it that way. It is much better practice to talk with people. And just because you can enter electronic orders doesn't take away the value of communicating with somebody else caring for the same patient. People forget that. Particularly if it's stacked, if I need this right away, Mr. Jones needs this immediately. That's something you communicate person, professional to professional, even though you may have a record of the order, because that goes to the filling service that gets supplies, needs to carry out the order to the bedside. So these are workflow problems. We have a few others at UW Medicine that we just can't wait for, and one is, who the heck ordered that blood test? Okay. So it's Dr. Smith. Well, we've got 64 Dr. Smiths. Or I can't even tell who it is, so I'll just put the attending name down here. But actually, the attendings rotated last Thursday, so it's the wrong attending. So they find a finding. Who do they call? This eats up professional time, leads to frustration. If you have the order there, it helps. Routing of results to inbox. I'm an ICU doc. I see 23 critically ill patients every morning. Every darn one of them has about 15 abnormal labs. And I don't want to have them come to my inbox because I've got a fellow, two residents, and a medical student who are looking at all the same labs, and I looked at them myself. So I don't need to see them at the end of the day. On the other hand, if I go to clinic, I order the TSH. I'm the only one that's going to see that. Maybe the nurse, but she's got lots of other people to work with. I want to see that one. So distinguishing between the workflow of the inpatient critical care practitioner and the same person in clinic, that is possible with our labeling of orders by the setting of care. The alerts I talked about, I mentioned one thing, the override rates. What you don't, what we're beginning to have a better appreciation for isn't so much the override rate, it's is that alert the best possible way to bring this piece of information to the attention of the treating clinician. This comes from the psychology literature, and it brings up the concept of a interruption lag. So I'm doing something, you say, Tom, can you, I just got this call, could you help me with this for a second? It takes me a while to stop doing what I'm doing and then say, okay, so what's up? And then when I'm done with that, I go back and say, okay, so where was I? And then I get back to where I was. And this is not specific to medicine. This is any human endeavor. There is a cost to this sort of interruption. So one has to be thoughtful about the best mechanism for bringing information or advice to the attention of somebody. And it may not always be an interruptive alert. It may be some other strategy. This is all an evolution. It is certainly not worked out. We understand the problem, however. Simple things like reminders. We're not even sure how to do that. Some reminders work very well, others don't. We do know that ordering electronically takes more time. We've had lots of studies. Some of these go back over prior to this decade. But what we learned at the Brigham was entering orders electronically initially took 44 minutes for medical house staff and 73 minutes for surgical house officers. Eric Van Eaton left, so I can show this slide. But the point here is that it takes more time than most people are willing to put in to enter orders. They earned this time back, and now it doesn't take more time. It doesn't take you away from the bedside at the Brigham. The Reagan Streif, they have initially, this is a famous place on CPOE, initially it doubled the time entering orders. That has been reduced. It's probably time neutral now at the VA. We time people 11 to 19 minutes for inpatient admission orders. That's too long.
Is it the time difference between the early experience and the later? Is that 3 months?
No, that's 6 years.
6 years?
Yeah. So this doesn't happen overnight. It takes lots of tailoring. Anyway, this remains, from the ordering practitioner perspective, one of the biggest barriers. So now what we don't know about CPOE, and a lot of this has to do with the fact that we don't have too many double-blind randomized controlled trials in this arena. And let's take away the double-blind part. Let's just say randomized controlled trials. Let's take away the randomization. We don't have any controlled trials. So mostly what we have are before-after series, which are subject to all sorts of confounding. You know, secular trends, there's the new initiative to do something, and we give it the credit to CPOE. It was actually the initiative that got credit. The classic article discussion is colorectal cancer screening. Big bump in colorectal cancer screening in some studies. Turns out that Katie Couric had a colonoscopy on morning news show. And everybody heard about the value of colorectal cancer screening. So everybody said, that makes sense to me. I would like to. So that bump explained a lot of the change. That's a secular trend. It had nothing to do with these interventions. This came from our GI division head, that anecdote. So the same thing could be operating here. So we really don't know. And if you do, and you have the papers, I'm very interested in learning about them. But I don't know how long it takes to write orders here at UW Medicine. I have a sense what it is. I've got no data. I don't know, in newly implemented sites, whether CPOE results in greater safety. I think it does. In fact, I'm pretty sure it does. In fact, that's why I'm working on this project. But do I have level one evidence that that's the case? I'm afraid I don't. What effect does CPOE have on the costs of care? So we're sitting around the team room at Harborview, and we're going to switch somebody from IV to oral antibiotics. And so the intern's saying, and the resident's off that day, so I'm the person they turn to. But we got a pharmacist there, and her supervisor. So we're sitting there in the room saying, well, let's put her on such and such. And my answer, I kid you not, was, well, actually, my daughter had to take that one. It cost an arm and a leg. I had to pay for it. I said, really? So I asked the pharmacist, how much does moxifloxacin cost for a 10-day course? And her answer is, I don't know. So it makes sense that if you introduce costs into the equation, it will be considered. And if they're equally effective, that one might consider costs if you knew it. So that's an appealing hypothesis. I'm not aware of convincing evidence that shows that CPOE influences that. Maybe you are. I'm pretty sure we don't know the best way to help clinicians write orders for safe, effective care. Okay. We know some things about it, but I don't think we know the best way, and that's why we're having trouble with the literature on reminders even. There's a lot that we don't know, and you might be surprised to hear this, but it has to do with the difficulty of doing scientific studies in such a frenetic environment as an acute care hospital or clinic. Here's an interesting thing that we do know. The idea was you're giving a blood thinner and an antibiotic at the same time. And that's not a great idea, or if you're going to do it, you need to be really, really careful. So this is Brian Strong, who's from Penn and extremely bright on this issue and many other things. His idea was, well, you know what? We give the reminders, they don't pay any attention to them. They blow by them. So we're going to take care of that. We're going to make this a hard stop, meaning you cannot go any farther. So the Human Subjects Committee, they put this in front of the Human Subjects and said, you don't need a trial for this. We're concerned that you're withholding valuable interventions. And then somebody else in the Human Subjects Committee said, well, actually, I guess we really don't know, do we? And then they thought about it long and hard, and they said, well, we should do this very carefully, because this is, blood thinners are dangerous, antibiotics are helpful, you got to be really careful with this. So they watched the data as they came in. What they found was that it did work. It kept people from ordering warfarin and trimethoprim sulfate at the same time. But it delayed treatment needed for some patients. So they stopped the trial, because our motto was first do no harm. And they were harming people in an attempt to help people. So the point here is there's a lot we don't know, and we need to be careful, thoughtful about it, and ask questions and answer those questions so we don't harm people and that we help people. So that's an interesting lesson to me. Now, the user interface, many of you in the room are more expert at this than I am, but I'm here to tell you most of the interface we see is a lot like one vendor's just like the other, but not so similar that you can get by without taking a 5-hour course before you start using the new one. Okay? They're not that close. But they're all pretty close to the same. And that's probably not the ideal interface for human beings. It may be, but it might not be. So I've got a few slides here of sort of off-the-wall ideas. This is from Anton Geisbühler. Now back in Geneva, but he was at Vanderbilt. It's called WizOrder. His idea was you type in what you're thinking about. We'll match it to what we know we can do. And if there's something missing, we'll tell you. So you type in Gen 80 IVQ12. That's not usually how you do it. When you write it, you usually write milligrams, and you put the time before the IV, the route, and you spell out genomycin. But in his system, you didn't have to do all that. And it would say, well, I think you mean genomycin, 80 milligrams IV, Q12 hours. Is that correct? And if yes, you just click once. And it says, what kind of infection are you treating? And then it gives you the choice of order sets that pertain to those infections. So it builds on what you're doing. And it's quite popular with house staff. And in my view, if it's popular with the nurses and the house staff, we might be on to something. if it's popular with the attendings who aren't doing a lot of the ordering, or you know the CEOs, well, maybe, maybe not. We'll see. But if the house staff like it, it's, you know, there's something to pursue here. So here's another one. This is Christian Lovis, who was a graduate student here. He did the same thing in the VA CPRS, worked quite well, was not adopted by the VA. Here's something comes from the UK, and the UK had this idea, with help from Microsoft, by the way, this is a collaboration, that if you have a drug dictionary that is smart, it can drive the interface used to order that agent. So here you have this drug dictionary. It's called DM plus D. And it will determine what the interface looks like. So a good example of this is that if there's a modified release form of a drug, it knows that. If you say you want it, it will show you the modified release choices, but not the non-modified release choices, and vice versa. So it's a great idea. The hope was that this would be a standard, and we'll see. We'll see. The UK is having a real slowdown in their activities, but I think this idea has promise. And to my knowledge, none of the US vendors are driving their user interface off of the formulary. And I don't think we're doing it this way, but there is promise for this, I think. Here's an article that demonstrates what we are not doing. This article was published in 1998 on ordering antimicrobials in the ICU. It turns out this computer system was extremely helpful in cutting down all sorts of bad things from happening to patients, speeding their recovery, speeding their discharge from the hospital, reducing costs. Tremendous article by Scott Evans and a bunch of other people who are now quite well known. And so this is 1998. It's now, 2011. So that's more than a decade. And here's a picture of us ordering antimicrobials at Harborview. Okay? So we haven't made the leap from great ideas into production systems produced by commercial vendors. Here's another great idea that Bill Tierney published with Clem McDonald, 1987. You can order electrolytes. Happy to do it, doctor. All you got to do is click here and we'll launch it. Oh, by the way, here are the results of that same test over in reverse chronological order for that patient. So, you know, if you look at that and say, I didn't know they had one just Thursday. That's plenty. You can cancel that. 10% reduction in the ordering. No risk to patients. Well, there is a little bit of risk, but now you're reducing the number of tests, and it's the judgment of the clinician what's duplicate. That's the beauty of this. You don't rely on some arbitrary definition. You let the clinician decide. This has not yet, to my knowledge, shown up in any commercial system. Okay, so we're doing the yes-no question because David's an expert in Epic. I know Cerner pretty well, a little bit of Epic, and so it's possible that these are catching on, and they probably will, but not today. All right, so now just a few minutes on the big project here. For those of you who haven't been around as long, this is our care delivery system, which includes Harborview Medical Center, UW Medical Center, Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, and Northwest Hospital. And I did put Valley General on here because we're not done negotiating with that. But you can see the numbers there. We have about 51,000 admissions, about 1.5 million outpatient and ER visits in our system. There's a list. It's actually more than that. It's about 4,000 nurses. I didn't correct this slide. A lot more than 1,200. So that's the campus you're in at the moment. This is the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance campus. This is the Northwest Hospital campus. And this is Harborview campus. In our community, I just picked 7 different organizations to let you know how things have progressed in this area to show where we stand at UW Medicine. And you can see on the left some familiar institutions. On the far right, you can see that most of them have done CPOE. We are one of 2 that haven't. Evergreen will beat us. They're going to do it this spring. We're going to do it the next year. On the other hand, we have done other things that they haven't. So I think we're all asymptotically approaching our goal in different strategies. So just to show you, this is not a rare thing anymore. This is, in our community, it's more common than not in large institutions. Group health cooperative is, of course, a really big outpatient-focused system in our community. This is our project here. We've got 2010, 11, 12. Go live is 2012. This is where we stand. Last year, there were 111 hospital department workflows under examined. I won't say understood because we did our best. So that's a lot when you consider how many meetings that represents. There have been 36 sessions with, 35 sessions with hospital departments and 58 sessions with physicians. And just to give you some clue as to how challenging that is with, you know, schedules and commitments and OR time and clinic block, it's not easy to get the people together. So this is a Herculean achievement. There are, you saw the number of people that we have doing this, and this is just the people at the bedside and on the wards. This is not the people in the lab, the radiology department, the pharmacy, the materials management. There's a whole, everybody who works here really is involved in this. The dietary folks, big time. They are, it's very important that you get the diet right, because if people don't get to eat, and they should get to eat, they get cranky. So if you say NPO and they don't need to NPO, or vice versa, you know, you can cancel their OR procedure. So everyone who works here is involved in this project, really. That's probably a little strong, but pretty close to it. And, oh, by the way, we're also rolling out Epicare in our clinics over the same period of time. So there's a challenge there. The team is has a relatively complicated structure. Just to show you how many groups are involved, it's a big, big crowd. This is our biggest initiative by far in IT services for clinical computing. And Paul Sutton is the physician lead. He has a counterpart in nursing, two counterparts in nursing. There's a whole group of nursing informaticists, pharmacists, you name it, there are people working on this initiative. And we brought on a bunch of new physicians to help with perioperative, ER, oncology, and ward hospitals workflow. So it's a really big undertaking for all of us. Just some numbers. We estimate that we enter about 33,000 orders per day here. So that includes medication, imaging tests, consultation, and so on. So if you get 99% of those right, you got 330 that aren't. So, you know, a tenth of a percent wrong, that's 33 a day that aren't right. So, or 3.3 a day. So you figure, you know, what's okay with you. The point is, there's a, you design these things best you can, and then you use them an awful lot. So you really have to think through this. The budget, MD documentation, all the notes electronically, doesn't even show up on this graph. Nursing documentation does, CPOE is there. The combination of ADT and facility billing was our, so far, biggest budgeted item. About $30 million for CPOE. The new tower they're building out there, you can see there is about $170 million. So you add all these together. These projects, collectively, are like building a new tower in a hospital, as far as capital is concerned. This is the kind of order modality list that you need to consider.
Tom, you got a couple minutes
couple
left
minutes
plus questions. So.
Yep. So you can see there's a lot to do. So my summary slide. I have a way to skip, you know, five. So, despite the decades' experience, CPOE is still regarded as the most challenging clinical computing project at most sites. There is broader understanding of the risks CPOE implementations pose, and there's also great enthusiasm for doing a better job with decision support, which, as I pointed out, that's one of the reasons you're doing all this. There, a lot of the evidence that we have here is from before and after study designs. There are very few randomized trials. We have, at long last, embarked on a big initiative, and we're going to go live in 2012. I think one very interesting opportunity here is for us to be creative in studying how this works. I think you can understand why it's not the ideal time to be doing interventions on all this when it's still being developed and trained and doing interventions. It's just not the moment for that, but for asking questions, doing analyses, doing research on the effect of this, I think it's a golden opportunity that we're not going to have in our careers very often. And there's just a few papers that will be in the handouts. So time for maybe two or three questions. David, by the way, is one of our physicians working on this project. He's working more on the Epicare side, which is why I didn't. Epicare has been doing CPOE for over a decade.
Where do things stand in terms of comparison and implementation strategies of phase versus Big Bang with respect to patient safety and both adoption and dissemination?
So Big Bang versus Go Slow pilot. Chris Longers did a big review of this. Basic answer is anecdotal evidence. It's completely up to the site to say it worked for us, and we think you should do it this way. But no randomized controlled trials. You know, there's so many covariates. So more sites now are doing Big Bang than used to, I have to say.
I'm going to build up this point with my SPOE. I'm just curious, in addition to the fishing water entry, is there any plan for you to build up a system for better visualize those reports, those past reports and those current reports?
Oh, yeah.
And is that easy query for the fishing water provider?
Yeah, I think what, it's a very good question you're pointing out, that, you know, we do more than just look at orders. Okay, we look at information, and that is very important. And there's a lot of work going on in that. I didn't focus on it today, but you know, how we get results back to the right person. Eric, is it working perfectly?
Oh, you know, there's probably a few things we can see here and there.
It's a very good point. And we also write notes.
Yeah, and also sometimes there are some critical writing.
Yes.
Who are going to be responsible for those people?
That I think we pretty much know, don't you?
And communicating that to the right person at the right time.
No, we're right joking because we're struggling with all of these issues and many more.
So early on, Tom, you said that, that we're not very far along in the U.S. and they aren't in the U.K. either, but they are in some other parts of the world. Where? Who's out there? Where is this being done more effectively or uniform?
Globally, CPOE and complete automation, EMRs, is the highest in China, which in the UK. It's basically every GP practice. If you go to what they call the acute care trusts, which are the hospitals, they're not as far along as we are. But I think as far as the number of practitioners, UK, to my knowledge, leads the pack, and I'm sure I'm overlooking many other parts of the globe that are, you know, I don't know, Taiwan probably well ahead of the U.S.
So what role does a single payer system play in allowing them to be further ahead?
Completely irrelevant, Fred. I don't know if you're right.
Sorry.
Well, let's see now. Kaiser's done it. VA's done it.
Health's done it.
Health's done it. I think that has a big influence on commitment, resources, training, uniformity of processes. Money influences decision making.
Well, and a key factor is that in those organizations, ignore single payer as a concept, but when all of the costs and expenses are under a single umbrella,
right,
then net savings to the system are a benefit to the system, whereas
yep,
even the university has the physician's practice separate from facilities billing, separate from the nursing budget, which means that apparent savings in one arm may be offset by additional costs in the other, and it's difficult to assess that, but more importantly, there isn't that holistic approach to the budgeting. So for example, in group health, it has been proven to be beneficial to encourage physician-provider electronic communication to the extent of blocking time in physicians' clinic days to deal with electronic communication, because that is net less costly to take care of a given panel of patients that way than to bring everybody in for those visits or to have them talk to someone on the phone. And it's not necessarily just physicians, it's also the entire healthcare team. Whereas in our environment, it unfortunately right now with a capitated system, on a pay-per-visit system, non-capitated system, if we were to reduce the total number of visits, then there is a misalignment of incentives. And this is something that is a major issue. And in some of the challenges with CPOE, some of the things in your slide where you talked about the costs of CPOE, where you shift burden of activity. So some of what is occurring that has caused some physicians to be concerned is you're shifting the burden of activity from the unit services coordinator, who's transcribing these notes and doing this stuff, to physician personnel, which is not, or nursing personnel or respiratory therapy personnel, which is not necessarily in that cost savings system. And a lot of these questions, as Tom's pointed out, are really difficult to study.
I think an important add-on piece to that is that the current push is to design systems that are that have very focused goals. Like, I want to get what the doctor wants done out of the doctor's head and into the computer. But that's only half of what's needed, right? What you need is a feedback loop that then says, okay, now I'm going to show you what the results are of what happened when you pushed enter on that order. And that you're going to watch and see and get the appropriate feedback to the right people. So we have all these ways of getting orders in or getting, you know, doing these sort of half measures, but the feedback systems, the heads-up display, the sort of, you know, team-based cognitive shared mental model of what the downstream consequences have been aren't there. They could be there, and I encourage those of you who are going to go out and build and design and maintain and purchase and be responsible for these systems to think about that whole loop. And I think, you know, Tom showed all these little widgets like, oh, by the way, here are the past three laboratory study results. And by the way, this is the relative cost of different antibiotic choices. Those are feedback pieces that I don't know why they haven't caught on, probably because the world knows that, well, the doctors will take care of that. They'll go and do the extra research that they need to do to fill in the gaps. Don't make them fill in the gaps because they make mistakes on that end.
Yep. One last.
So I was just going to ask, you mentioned there are plenty of opportunities.
I mean, on this initiative?
Yeah.
That's about a lot. I don't know of any that are, you know, human subjects approved or even applied.
But now would be the time to do
it. Now would be a great time to get plugged in, and I can give you some names. I understand these folks are way busy, but if you're not planning to, if you're going to help them with their job, help them get the job done successfully, then there's a way to ride the wave of this project. That's key, though, because they are just, you know, always being asked every week, are you on time, are you on schedule, or whatever. But, man, we're at a university, we should be studying this.
Yeah, studies of what's occurring, I think, are a really doable thing. Studies that interfere with what's going on are pretty much a non-starter, unfortunately.
Yeah.